Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Exciting day for practice today. It's great.
Stunning. Yep. I will tell you that I had the great pleasure, as I have on many lovely days, of being out at the farm. And it was absolutely gorgeous and glorious.
Fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good time.
Yeah, and then your next letter, I'm sure I will hear all about what's new at the
farm. That's exactly right. That is exactly right. We even remembered at the very last minute to take some pictures. So we often get so engaged in what we're doing, then we get all finished and go, oh, shoot, we should have taken pictures of this. But this time we remembered partway through.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
I have an announcement here.
All right.
Meditation is one of the most effective ways to train the attention to be with present moment experience. Join Sangha for our virtual meditation groups, conference call meditation sessions that take place 7 days a week. And for more information about this and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org.
Yes.
Yes. And a few reminders for tonight. If you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Sherry, please press *6 and then 1. Conversation on one topic, please, and about 5 minutes is great.
Mm-hmm.
And Sherry, I have an email from a listener here to start us off tonight.
Oh, okay. Somebody in another time zone, I'm guessing.
You are correct.
All right.
Here's the
one of those middle of the night people, probably.
Well, that's what they wrote. Hi. because Open Air is in the middle of the night for me, I wonder if I can ask for some guidance. I will hear the guidance as I always listen to Open Air as a podcast. My grandmother lost her parents when she was a child. And so, consequently, when she had children of her own, she tried to hang on to them using guilt with the expectation that they would focus on her. My mother was very needy of my and my brother's attention and time, and we grew up feeling guilty for any of her unhappiness. So I made a conscious effort not to guilt trip my sons and fool myself that I don't mind if they don't keep in touch with me as frequently as ego tells me I need. Egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate also tells me I don't know who I am or what I want. I now recognize this as a habitual message, but it often still hooks me. When my son asks me to babysit, I want to say no. But why? I love my granddaughter, but I hear ego saying I won't be able to, quote, manage, unquote, her. I'll get too tired and I feel anxious, etc. As I write this, I see that these are, quote, not the good right person, unquote, messages and responses, aren't they? Any guidance would be much appreciated. In Gasho, from a listener.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. I wish I'd been taking notes because what I heard was three distinct items in that, what felt like different items to me at any rate. And so I might call upon you, Michael, to refresh my memory.
Yep. But sure.
So one of the things that I have observed through the years of working with people is that this is kind of what happens with children. All right. People want to have children because I project. This is my projection. They want to have children because they want to create the family that they wanted to have and didn't have. And so they people get married and they have children, and it's really difficult until a certain age, and then it gets easier. And, you know, children, generally speaking, have this short window of time where their parents are everything to them. Their parents are just everything, right? That's all the attention that they want is from the parents. It's their safe place. It's their whatever is going on, right? And then they hit an age where they start to become their own people, and they don't have that relationship with their parents anymore. And if parents don't understand that, then it gets to be really painful, difficult, because it's the way of the world, right? The parents are very invested in the children, and the children are very invested in themselves. Now, it'll go the next way when those children, if they grow up and they decide to have children of their own, then the whole thing will repeat. But that's just the way it is. And so the world is full of people who feel like they want more from their children than they're getting. And to me, it's just sad that people don't realize that's the way it goes. And it's, in a way, it's the way it should go. You have children because you want to have children, and then they grow up and they want to have their own life. And that does not involve usually a great deal of time and attention for their parents, even if they love their parents, very fond of their parents. They still don't want to be with them all the time. So, that's one piece of it. And then there was the middle piece of it, which is you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but in this case the person wants more time with the son, that doesn't happen, and then there's the offer to take care of the granddaughter, and what happens there is that. We could see, I think, in listening to this, that well, there's the opportunity, right? If you want that kind of family relationship, well, gosh, now you've got the next generation, you've got another little child who is going to think you're absolutely wonderful and be the center of their world for a period of time until you're not. And so what happens there? The voices don't come in and say that. And say, well, this is perfect. Not only you get to have time with your son because you're engaged with his child, and you also have the opportunity to have a relationship with another child who's going to, look to you and love you and think you're wonderful and all of those kinds of things. So what's going on there? Well, I would say it's the same process, just taking the reverse, right? So I want more with my son, and that's not available, so I can suffer over that. I get talked out of having a relationship with the granddaughter, and so on either side, the ego voices are saying, are pointing out what doesn't work, right? So there's the loss and deprivation because the son is not more available for relationship, and then there's the pushing away of the little child because I'll be overwhelmed. I'll get too tired. It'll just be too much. So, person being kept from having any relationship that would be fulfilling. Seems to me. Yeah. And so just looking at that, the answer that we always get to is, those voices that are making these cases are making these cases in order to create suffering. That's it. So if we realize that, and if we start listening to them from that perspective, okay, so always pointing out what is missing in the one relationship, pointing out how the other relationship is not, why do that? My first thought with the son is, if you want a relationship with, a young person, the world is full of young people who would be happy to have an adult who would focus attention and shower them with affection and support them and encourage them and all of these kinds of things. So that could be fulfilled in many, many, many ways. In the other relationship, of course, it's just simply a let's see, not preparing ahead of time for failure, but realizing, well, I'll go and find out. And if I'm not listening to the voices, I won't be overwhelmed. If I'm not listening to the voices, I won't get too tired. And then things really begin to open up. And, of course, if I have more of a relationship with my grandchild, then I'm also going to have more of a relationship with my child because they are kind of a package deal at that point. And it's very good for everybody except ego.
Yes, yes. And I got the sense as you were talking that ego creates the problem, in quotes,
yes.
And then prevents me from, like, any way of trying to address it.
That's right.
And thwarts me every time.
Well said. Yes, well said. And, you know, Michael, that's the formula right there. Right. Yeah. In fact, a while back we had that fun thing going on where, so I'm ego, and I walk up to you and I hand you a package marked the problem, right?
Yes.
And I hand
yeah.
you the problem, and then I go off, and now there you are, stuck with the problem.
Yes. Yeah.
Except, as you point out, now you're gonna open that package, get a sense of what this problem is, and you're gonna start looking for ways to solve it. And then I get to come back in and say, no, that's not gonna work. No. No, that's not going to work. That's not a good idea. You can't do that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it seems like with practice, what I learn is either that's not, package is not for me, or it's not a problem.
It's like when UPS delivers something, and it actually is for your neighbor.
There's a wrong address.
And you can just, the wrong address, you can just take it next door and set it on the porch and go about your life. Yeah.
Yes. Fabulous. Thank you, Sherry. That was
Thank
really
you, Michael.
Good. And we have some folks here who would like to talk with us, Sherry.
All right. Let's hear from them.
Let's do that. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry. Hey, Michael. This is SRB, San Francisco.
Hey, SRB.
Hi, I'm not in a very good place.
Uh-oh.
I know, but you know what? But I am in the right place. I was so afraid to call in. And yet, just hearing, of course, right, just hearing you guys, it's such a comfort.
Yeah.
Conditioning really, 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 really tried to keep me from calling.
Boy,
and here
I am. Yeah, and here you are. Here you are, brave, brave, courageous human being. And isn't that, you know, I know we talk about it all the time. I know we do. But to have our own experience, I'm in a really difficult place. And the voices in my head are trying to talk me out of getting any support.
I know.
Yeah. What could be clearer? When I say, you know, I say, the voices hate you and would kill you if they could, and people go, oh, no, that's so extreme. No, it's not. No.
It's not. They're doing everything they can right now. Like, that's, I know, it's like they're just, it's just that, like, torture. And,
yeah.
Yeah. And I'm so grateful. I'm just so grateful that practice is here.
Yeah. And it's really here, right? So, you know, the thing that's so difficult for us, because in that place, what we're up against, I mean, you're so vulnerable, right? Because you're having a hard time. And then here comes nastiness and hatefulness to just pile on and pile on and pile on, right? So, oh, gosh, I can't remember where, oh, I think it's something that I was just reading in, well, it doesn't matter. Never mind. I don't want to go in that direction. Never mind. So to see that and to realize that, and then to take a stand, which can involve something like, okay, I am going to replace those voices in my head with other voices. And I'm going to do that around the clock. And I can do that because I know where those other voices are. Right? I have years,
right.
years of supportive conversations at my fingertips. And I'm going to listen to them because what I know is I cannot be left alone with
right.
those hateful ego voices for a single moment.
Right. I know. That's like my favorite quote of yours ever. It's like, don't let him get you alone in the dark.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Yes, that's a sleep with the light on, right? So that you never lose your recorder.
Or, I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know. And you know, one of the things they've been doing that's been especially hard, like normally I have a hard time anyway, like, you know, anxiety and fear at night. And so I normally listen to open air, to any kind of monastery calls or your books on tape. And I've been trying, like I was having a hard time with the calls. I just like, it just was like, I couldn't understand anything. And then I was trying to listen to like the fear book. And even that, like conditioning just somehow, like, I don't know what it was doing to me, but it was like, I couldn't even listen. And those are the things that always helped me to feel, you know, connected and calm.
Mm-hmm.
They're really doing it. They're really doing a number on me right now.
Yeah. And so what was it like not to be able to listen? What?
Well, I was trying then, like, because I could tell, like, I couldn't, I think part of it, like, I'm just, like, I'm in such deep grief and such, like, anxiety and panic all at once, and I think, like, I couldn't understand the words, but then I was just, like, trying to say to myself, well, just listen to Sherry's voice, like, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to understand. I remember when I very first ever came to practice, one of the first things I ever heard you say was, like, it's okay if you don't understand, just, you know, just stay here, or something like that, which I loved.
Yeah.
And I was yeah. trying to do that, and I don't know, it's like, I think part of it, I don't know, my body, like, I'm so, the grief is like, it's like really, like, taken over my system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, yes, yes, absolutely so. I don't know if we've talked about this, probably, because I've, you know, you've known me for, well, I don't want to say forever because that makes me sound really old, but a long time, a lot of decades,
yeah,
right?
Well, yes, it's a lot
yeah,
of decades.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so when my mother died, you know, I just went to bed, and at that point, you know, there wasn't any of the modern technology, and all I had was a record, actually, of Rhapsody in Blue, and I would put the record on, and when it got to the end, I would just start it over again, and when it got to the end, and I did that for a long time, and that
wow.
was that was the best I could do, and
oh.
you know that was all I had, and so. So, you know, whatever you have to do to get through this is what you have to do to get through this. And if you know, if you stay with it, you know, you will get through it. Even though at any point in it, it feels like probably not. Probably
I know.
Not. Yeah.
And you've known me a long time, right? And so you know that, like, one of their favorite things is always to, like, it's always like, you know, just get off the planet. You don't belong here. Get off. Like, that's just like, it's
yeah.
always been like one of the ways that they try to get me. And yeah, I know. Like,
mm-hmm. yeah. Yeah. And it's so, well, you know, it's what we talk about. It's kind of the heart of practice. And that is, you're a meal. You know, they're just gobbling up this energy just and trying to make it as awful as possible. And of course, you know, why don't you just kill yourself? Makes it as awful as it can possibly be. And there's the meal. And, you know, FRB, I don't know if at this point you can, you if this will resonate at all, or if it just feels, you know, okay, Sherry, whatever. But to take a step back and see if you can fight for this person.
No.
You know, if this person were your child, you know, you would do anything to offer comfort and reassurance. Just, I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm going to stay right here with you for as long as this lasts, and someday it'll be over, and we'll be on the other side of it, and we'll be together.
Oh.
And I'm not going to give up on you. I'm not. You're a beautiful human being. The world needs you.
No, I didn't need to hear that. And I know, like, I didn't think that that's part of it. Is it's like I've been abandoning her. Like, just
yes,
I know.
Yes.
I have
yes.
been.
Now that's not to produce guilt, okay? Because
I know.
You've got enough going on without feeling guilty. But it really is true. It really is true. And that's what the voices are going for. Get you on the side of the voices against her. Abandon her. Leave her. Let her die. Yeah.
I know. And that's why I'm so glad, like, you know, I had a guidance and I was encouraged to call. And I was like, I can't call. But I did, you know.
Yes, you did. Yeah.
And I'm so glad, because it's like, I feel like that's like showing her, like, okay, you know, I'm sorry. I will show up for you, you know.
Yes. Well, and to realize I am showing up for her.
Right.
You know, I reached out to get help. I reached out to get support and guidance. I reached out to talk about it. I am showing up for her. Now, this is very good. Now I need to show up more for her.
Right.
Make her the center of everything. Make her the focus. Not this person who is being beaten up and threatened and tortured. You know, her way out of this is to love something else.
Mm.
Yeah? And she's got a human being there who really needs to be loved,
oh.
who really needs to be prioritized, put first, sacrifice everything for her well-being.
Well, Sherry, thank you so much.
Now, this is recorded.
I know.
I mean,
thank God.
It'll take Michael a little while to get it up, but it is. And you know, at this point, this is one of those stay close. You know, whatever it takes. You probably have my phone number. Use
no.
it. If you don't have it, get it. I know you know how to get it, right? And so use it.
Thank
yeah?
you.
Don't leave, as you said, just don't leave her alone in the dark.
I know. Thank you so much. I'm so glad I called.
Me
Thank
too.
You.
Good
you.
Good choice. Take care of yourself.
Okay.
And stay
okay,
close.
Discussion. Okay.
Discussion.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, SRB, and that was extraordinary, Sherry.
That's called guts, huh?
That's courage.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's courage.
And it is standing up for the human being. It's taking a stand, right? I'm gonna do everything I can to stop this suffering, to get support, to get encouragement, not to be left alone. Not to be left alone with that hatefulness. That's what we all have to do. It usually, for most of us, it's not at that level. Although for most of us, at some point, if it hasn't been, it will be.
Yeah.
So to know what to do in that situation, there's a role model. Just reach out, get all of the support that you can get.
Yeah, unconditional.
Yep.
Whatever it takes.
Whatever it takes, exactly.
Wow. And Sherry, we're going to talk to another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Who's this?
Great. Hi, my name is Faith. I just wanted to see if I was the next caller, and I am.
Say that again. What is your name?
So my name is Faith.
Spell it for me.
Faith.
Faith.
F as in feather.
Ah, well, welcome.
Thank you. Can you guys hear me clearly?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, great. So it's good to meet everyone here. I am diagnosed as paranoid schizophrenic. I've been in and out of mental health hospitals throughout the country. And the practice, your practices, have definitely helped me along the way. And I wanted to just inquire, ask you about, you know, the difference between what you talk about in your books, which is sort of an antagonistic voice, and what I deal with, which is a kind of like the same voice, but maybe different content. I deal with a lot of paranoia, so like everyone's out to get me. We live mm-hmm. in a simulation. People moving my stuff to mess with me. So I get a lot of paranoid thoughts, mm-hmm. and they kind of feed on each other. They feed on fear, and people with my condition generally can't logic our way out of these thoughts. Even though someone else hears you and they go, okay, that's a crazy person, that's a crazy person's thought, we get stuck in them.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know what you thought about working with those kinds of thoughts, especially when the person also has hallucinations and like a lot of projection. Like I can hear the TV talking to me sometimes as if it was talking to me directly. Mm-hmm. And so I know you're not a medical professional, but I just wanted to hear what you thought. And I also had a tiny additional question about sort of two different things you've mentioned to do in practice. And one of them in the fear book is to go toward fear. And then in other books, you say to redirect your attention toward the life you want. And I just wanted you to touch on the difference between those two things as well. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's start with the first one. Okay. And what I would say about that is that it's a continuum. Okay, it's a continuum. So mm-hmm. even though health professionals will say, you know, if you have voices in your head, you need medication. Okay, mm-hmm. now I, in all of the decades I've been doing this work, have never met a person who does not have voices in their head.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and so anybody who says they don't have voices in their head is either lying or they haven't realized it yet. And that mm-hmm. happens to a lot of people, because a lot of people believe that they are thinking rather than hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay. So that's one piece of it. Now, there's no question that you are out kind of on one end of the continuum, right? The thing that is that I tell you what, I wish everybody could be as clear about that as you are,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you know what's going on. As you say, you can still get caught up in a loop about it. But mm-hmm. in our conversation, you are able to describe very clearly the various states that you go in and out of.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So what makes that the same for everybody, at least everybody I've ever met, is getting caught in the loop.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the people that I deal with would be, you know, we would be classified as, well, sort of normal, you know, mm-hmm. but not normal in the sense of unconscious about what's going on. That tends to make people doing awareness practice different. You know, there's a level of paying attention to what's going on and seeing it for what it is that a lot of people who don't practice awareness aren't doing, right? So we are perceived often as odd, but normal, right? That same group of people, all of us, get caught in loops exactly the same way you do.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point of believing it so completely that they will get upset. We will get upset. I'll include myself, although in all honesty, I don't think this is the case for me any longer, but I certainly know the experience, right, of being so caught up in it that if somebody doesn't agree, they become the enemy. Okay. So that would be the first part of it. And so to know that you these things happen to you, and when they happen to you, you don't have the ability to get yourself out of them. That's really interesting to me because I would have said that, it's just really interesting. I've never worked with anybody who is self-identified as having the extreme of these things that you work with. Now, whether when the television is talking to you, if you practiced awareness to a certain point, would it dawn on you when that was going on that that's not real? Because that's the same process everybody has to catch on to. So if somebody is, believing that their spouse is critical of them as a way of controlling them, say, to be in the middle of that thought pattern and then to suddenly realize, wait a minute, I'm in that thought pattern. That's not what's actually happening. I'm caught believing something that nobody else would think is true, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you could do that. I don't know.
The challenge
it'd be interesting to find out.
I can almost see it on two different channels. On one hand, I see the story that I'm projecting onto the screen to where the characters are talking about my inner world rather than the second channel, which is the movie that the director made. I'm very aware there's a movie the director made, and the director had no intention of the characters talking to the audience, me. So I know the projected one isn't true, but the emotional weight of it is so strong that it's debilitating, even though another part of me is like, this, there's no way these people on TV are talking to me. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes perfect, absolute sense. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, absolute sense. And again, I'm going to say that what's going on with you is if most people are in a range, say 50% is normal, whatever the heck that means, most people are 10% on either side of that 50, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're out there at 80, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And so the level of stress that it puts on a person to be caught in that kind of emotional tumbler can feel absolutely overwhelming. Yes.
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's so fascinating to me that you are so aware of that, right?
Yes. So, I think I have to be aware of it, or I would be in a bad position emotionally and spiritually.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. Well, and again, I would project that if you weren't aware of it, you would be where most conditioned human beings are. Just caught in a story that is not true to anyone but them, believing it, living it, feeling it, being overwhelmed by it, depressed by it, hopeless in it. Yes, all of those things. Yeah.
How do I work with this bundle that's so thick?
Well, it sounds to me like you already are.
I certainly am. I'm like the practice I most use is like being the person you want to be there. I'm always like on the sidelines trying to work this thing while there's like other me like really struggling with it.
Which again, I'm going to say is like every other human being I've ever known. So there's the human being, right? Now in our practice, we call the overlay the ego, right? False belief system that people really believe is who they are and that what they see is true and real and all of that. And then there's the witness, which you're very in touch with, who is, and most people are not. Most people aren't even aware of the witness observing, but you are. And in fact, you identify, it sounds like, more with the witness than you do with the human being or the ego.
I have both sort of existing much of the time. I try to be like a best friend to myself. I don't know if ego is the definition of the person suffering, I'll say.
Yeah. 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 Yes. 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 Which in the previous conversation is what we were talking about. If you were on the call for that previous conversation, it's the person who is suffering so much. And what we have the ability to do is step outside of that suffering, move into that unconditionally loving place, and care for the person from that. And if we can move from being identified with the suffering into the unconditional love that can care for that suffering person, then that's where we want to be. And as you just described it, to be the best friend, to be the unconditional love, the person who is always there no matter what I, in quotes, am going through. I identified as the separate self or the ego self.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so for the second part of my question, thank you, by the way, because in the fear book, the method seems to be to follow the fear and to sort of look around it and see what fear is to demystify it.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you practice is what you have. The method is to turn attention away from the thing and toward a life you want.
Yes.
So how do those two things work together?
Okay. So what we want to do, again, in awareness practice, what we want to do is to pay attention to something until we understand everything that there is about it.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have a voice, you know, if conditioned mind wakes me up in the middle of the night and I wake up into anxiety, I'm having panic attacks over whatever, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I want to be with that process. Now, of course, I can rarely talk anybody into being excited about this, but I want to be with that process until I understand everything there is to understand about it. I see that it is a program. It's a pattern. It's something that is embedded and it acts out in this particular, it shows up in this particular way. Once I get that, absolutely, I'm distant from it. I see it for what it is. I know it's not me. I don't need to be in relationship with it. Now, when it arises, I simply turn my attention away.
After you've learned about it enough. When is that enough
point?
That's
right. Yeah, well, you'll know. You'll know when it's repetitious. You see that it's going to say the same things. It's going to do the same. The reactions are, you know, it's like you're watching a rerun. So you watch that rerun two or three times until you realize, yeah, yeah, I can do the dialogue myself. Then it's time to redirect the attention.
Beautiful. That's wonderful. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Let call again, would you?
I would love to. It's great hearing your voice. I hope you guys have a good rest of your night and have a good practice.
Thank you. You too. You too.
Thanks for joining us. Faith, that was a fabulous sharing. The show has been incredibly illuminating so far.
Yeah. Very, delightful.
Delightful.
Yeah.
And sure, we are going to hear from our good news update, and then we'll come back to more callers.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And Jen, your guest is now live, and I'll turn it over to you for good news update.
All right. Thank you, Michael. And yes, welcome Sharon, who is here to speak with us about her experience of participating in creative ways of assisting Cantalumba. Welcome, Sharon.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Glad.
Yeah, thanks.
Nice of you to ask me.
Yeah, well, it was so perfect because, as you know, Sharon, we are in the middle of the Bridge Walk, which this year is a menu of contributions, and it's all these fun, creative, many of them simple ways that various folks in Conga have seen to support the work in Cantalumba, and yours was one of the inspirations, which is the one we're focused on this week, which was giving from one-time income. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about how that unfolded for you.
Okay, sure. Well, I've always supported the Africa Project, and I often think, well, I'm going to do this or that, and we've had different types of ways to raise funds in the past, and mm-hmm. each year I try to think of something. You know, I know you. Mm-hmm. I watch people giving; they make pottery, you know, and they do all these mm-hmm. Ingenious ways of raising money. And I mm-hmm. I took part in it was an Africa steward call, and I just felt really inspired, so I started brainstorming different things I could do, and I was going to wash cars. I thought about that, you know, because remember Sherry had, mm-hmm. She was talking to us about earning money a while back, mm-hmm. and so I almost had myself mm-hmm. talked into that one. And then what I came to was, I'm part of a professional organization where I help mm-hmm. to assess people getting certified. And when they get certified, then they have to recertify. And so I'm an assessor for that process. And I get a stipend for that. And I've been always kind of like, well, am I going to give this up? I'm kind of getting up in years. Somebody my age has already has stopped being an assessor. You know, why do I keep doing this? It's not easy either. It takes time and takes a lot of thought. And then one day it just hit me, you know what, let me give half of my stipend to the Africa Project. And what happened was, it when I get stuck and I'd be having trouble, it helped to relieve some of the stress of it, because I knew what I was doing was going to support these kids. You know, I've got the picture up on my screen now, these beautiful, beautiful children. And it was... You know, I've just really found that it was a really good way to give, and I haven't missed it. I give half of it, so I do get some. Mm-hmm. And anyway, that's what I finally thought of to do.
How perfect, Sharon, really. Because I just love that piece of it changes it. It changes the activity that you're engaged in, and it's such a perfect illustration of why this having a project like this is such a great parallel in awareness practice, because I project from what you describe there's suffering that the voices want to pull you into over this role as the assessor, right? Just like it tries to pull us into suffering over anything. And how does it do that? Well, it does that through a conversation, right? Well, I don't know, I mean, maybe you're too old, you know, it's kind of hard, I don't know, should I still be doing it, right? So you're going to get into a conversation, some duality, back and forth. And then it dawns on you, hey, wait, you know, people are doing all these creative things. Like the person who's doing the pottery is a potter, right? That's why they're doing pottery. Mm-hmm. Well, this is what you do. This is a place where you've been able to really contribute in life. And so in order to assist the project in Cantawamba and also you, it occurs to you that you could use this as a way to financially support Cantawamba. And not only does it do those things, but it also gets you out of that conversation. So I project now from what you describe, anytime it tries to pull you into that conversation, you have an anchor point, sort of like that last conversation Sherry just had. It's a way to turn your attention to, hey, actually, you know what? Every time I engage in this, the folks in Cantawamba are being supported financially.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. And not to take, you know, oh, this is not good enough, I can't do it, or, you know, or it's too much work or whatever. It just kind of gave me that extra push. And it was, you know, it was, and I was watching for when they were going to make the payment. And when they didn't, I wrote to them. And
I want my money for my kids in Cantawamba, please.
Exactly. I was a little more insistent. And it was a lot easier than washing cars. I just had to, when I think about what I can make, $15 per car maybe at the most, you know.
And, you know, the other thing that occurs to me when you say that, Sharon, you know, in this case, it sounds like it wasn't one-time income. It's kind of an ongoing thing. But there are times, I think, where someone else wrote in about, you know, a talk that they were invited to give. And again, there can be, you know, for a lot of us, that can be intimidating, right? Oh, I don't know, I'm not great at public speaking, that kind of thing. But then the inspiration of, you know what, I'm going to say yes, which you know is going to be good for me as awareness practitioner, because I'm going to have to go up against all the things I have to go up against to be successful with that. And I'm going to say yes and use the stipend that I get for that talk to give to Cantawamba, you know, because then, again, that gives me that extra, like, whoa, this, that really changes it. And I love the piece you just said of even reminding someone, oh, you know, it looks like the payment hasn't hit, because it's not, quote, just for me, but it's also for this thing that I love, it somehow frees me up to be much more forward about that.
Yeah, it's a lot easier, like, say, for example, giving a talk or something like that, because I've thought about, oh, I could give a little course or something. And, you know, instead of thinking about, well, I'm going to take all the money. No, this course, if you'd like to come to it, is in, you know, it's to help a project in Africa. It's just a whole different thing, you know. So.
Yeah. And I also, thank you for saying that, because I appreciate also, Sharon, the piece of that you split it, you know, so. Maybe some people want to give whatever the stipend is to Cantawamba. Other folks, you know, can start a side business because they also need more income. So it doesn't have to be all of it goes to Cantawamba. You know, some portion of it does that, and the rest of it can go to the expenses that I need to cover. And so it never has to be that kind of all or nothing thing, but it can be that place that we often look at in practice of what's best for all here.
Yeah, and you know inside, I think I've always been like that. I know in my gut kind of if it's, you know, if I'm giving too much or,
yeah,
you know, to me that felt like fair.
Yeah.
Happy to do it.
Yeah. Very lovely. Well, Sharon, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon to talk about it.
You're most welcome. Thank you for the opportunity, and I hope we get lots and lots of projects for the children in Africa.
Yeah, me too. I think we will. You know, it just, Sangha tends to step up, so we're counting on it, as they always do.
They will. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Sharon.
You're welcome.
So happy.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. And Michael, we will turn it back over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Sharon. And welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Some good work going on.
Very
good work going on out there.
There is. That was very inspiring. I've been thinking about that very topic my own self. One of the things that I really liked, well, I guess it's going to come up later, so maybe. But anyway, it's the idea of, like, you know, my credit card gives so much back. You know, you spend so much and they give you a pittance. Yeah, you know that one. And so to be able to take that money and just give it to Cantawamba, you know, it's like, it's kind of a strange thing, but it's like free money, you know, because you know what I mean? Yeah. So looking at all of those creative kinds of things that people have come up with, ways to support, I love it.
Great. And we have another caller here.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Justin in Vermont.
Hey, Justin.
Hi. Nice to speak with you.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I signed up for, got outside of the conditioning long enough to sign up for listening buddies or an accountability buddy and the recent Enneagram class. And I've been using my accountability buddy as a way to help get me to the recorder every morning. And I notice now with more recording just how often I'm recording about this dull sort of morning feeling, which of course we've gotten to look at with the Enneagram workshop. And I have a question similar to one that was asked earlier about, you know, I guess I was starting to wonder, am I speaking to the pattern by continuing to talk about, oh, it's like another day and I feel like I have to do it all over again and I don't want to, or is there more there that I haven't seen? And I will say one of the things I think is often, and an Enneagram caller talked about this too, often the mentor's voice is not really reaching me, or sounds like nice words that aren't really connecting. And I actually got a little deeper under it with just tonight doing the interviewing process, which I'm just beginning via the directions you gave us. And I felt like it brought that element of attention that the confused person wants when things are getting stressful and feeling daunting.
Mm-hmm.
I felt accompanied.
You felt heard. You weren't alone.
I felt at least accompanied, yes, less alone. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly part of the pattern.
Okay. So with the recording, were you just making straight recordings or was it a two-handed recording?
Oh, a two-handed recording.
Okay. And so when you listened back to the guy who's, you know, oh, here we go again, another day, another slog, and then you listened to that, and then what the mentor had to say didn't really land.
It varies, but often it doesn't. Yeah, often it doesn't really land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah, okay. So that's so interesting, and I hope you'll stick with it for this reason, that it's so difficult to know whether it's that. Well, who's listening? That's the.
Yeah.
So the guy talks about what's going on with him, and then the mentor says something. He might not be, the morning chap. He might not be hearing it. And the person who is there now, and it could be who is there to start this process, could be somebody came in and is now listening to what the mentor is saying. And that person, for that person, it's like it's not landing.
Like,
however,
somebody running defense for ego?
Exactly, yeah. So if ego has slid in there, then definitely it's going to be a, yeah, I don't really hear that. Yeah.
Somebody so, running defense for ego, being ego. I mean, ego running defense for ego. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. But very carefully, right, is going to appear to be somebody who's interested and cares. But, you know, it's just really not, it just really doesn't speak to me.
Mm-hmm.
So to kind of watch out for that. But then if the interview technique is something that feels like it's more on target for this, that can be really, really helpful. Again, it's very subtle, isn't it? So you're interviewing, maybe you, let's say the morning fella, you're going to interview him. What is it about the, right? And he's going to talk to you about that. Again, you want to be out of the corner of your eye watching who is listening to him. Does it feel like it's somebody who is just there, kind of a neutral, interested, but it's about him? Or is there, again, a slight edge to the whole thing, kind of a take that might give you a clue that might not be the most centered person in the world listening? Did I lose you on that one? Michael, did I lose everybody?
Yes. I think we may have lost him here.
Oh, drat.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Hold on one second. Justin?
Hi, I think I'm back.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. Well, it's, since we're very close to the end, just to summarize that we want to be, suspicious is such a strong word, right? But we want to be open to the possibility that the person who is listening or giving us information or that sort of thing might have an agenda. And mm-hmm. the really good part of that for awareness practitioners is that we get to practice constantly having that kind of "is that so" attitude to everything.
Is that so? Even about what the mentor or...
Yes.
Yeah.
Because for exactly what you started off describing, you know, if it's not landing, well, maybe it's not the mentor talking.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it is the mentor talking, but maybe the person who's stepped in there to listen. So it's a kind of, not skeptical even is kind of too strong, but just a questioning rather than mm-hmm. accepting things just at face value, rather certainly than just believing whatever it is that we're kind of encouraged to believe, just to have that, well, maybe yes, maybe no. Yeah, that's certainly possible. Let's take, you know, let's be open to whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. It with that attitude, we do tend to have a lot more experiences, which is wonderful for us and a hardship for ego, because because the ego just wants it to be, yeah, this is this and that's that and you're this and not that and you should and you're not, right? And so with the whole thing, we're practicing awareness. We're the awareness that is going to be aware of all of it.
If nothing else, it does strike me that, I mean, sometimes I'll actually still have the recorder in the right hand and say the feelings and everything, and sometimes it'll flip right then and there and something clear will pop out. And
yes.
And that's what I take with me. So it happens enough that I'm going to stick with it. And
yeah.
And also recording first thing in the morning leads to sometimes the thought drops in later in the day and I can record there. So.
Yes. Or yeah. And even at the end of the day, you know, kind of comparing the, how my day went compared to what it was like in the morning.
What
the forecast was. And to me, it just makes the whole thing come alive. You know, rather than I'm trying to get somewhere, I'm trying to figure something out, I want to be present for everything as it is. And so I have to practice being present. If I want to have all of life, I have to practice being here for all of life.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Go happy.
Go happy.
Thanks for joining us, Justin. And wow, Sherry, what a great show.
What a good time, huh? Lots to see.
Practice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you, Michael. Thank you, as always, for being there and keeping it all together for us.
My pleasure. It's been
all
great.
Right.
Thank you, everybody. Right. Thank you, Sherry.
All right. Thanks to you. Go happy.